Okay, welcome back. It's time for our monthly chat with Richard Allgaier, who has two items in his gallery this time. The first is a video, and it has to do with the Oracle of Delphi. And then the second one has to do with Pam Blondie, the alleged attorney general. So we'll find out what that's about as well. Hello, Richard. Welcome back.
Hello, Jeff. It's good to talk with you. How are you doing this July?
I'm just on top of the world. Couldn't be better.
That's good. It's a beautiful day here in Hawaii.
It's always a beautiful day in Hawaii. Are you back to swimming?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. How about riding waves?
1,000 meters today. Ran on the beach.
Did you surf any?
I didn't. I've got a surfboard here at my condo. I could walk across the street and surf. I need to go do that. But that dizziness is still a little problem.
No, you don't want to get bonked on the head.
No.
That's not good.
I don't want to do it. But I should at least take it out and paddle out. Because it's so beautiful.
You could fake it. And then there's AI. We could make it look like you're surfing.
I bought a new guitar last week.
I thought you were going to say a car. All right.
No, I just leased a car. But I like guitars. And there will be listeners to your program that will go, oh, cool story, Dick. I like Martin guitars. I have two too many. I don't know which two I'd get rid of, but I have two too many, about eight of them. And
it's hard to play those simultaneously.
It is. I've been working on it. I can play two at once, but any more than that,
Martin has been around a long time. They're kind of the godfather of guitars, aren't they? Martin.
Yeah, they started building them in like 39 or 18. Yeah.
Yes, Stradivarius's illegitimate great-grandson was behind Martin Guitars.
C.F. Martin. So anyway, the great Martin guitars were built in the 1930s. They're legendary. They call it the golden era. And these guitars just sound better. They just are more powerful. They're warmer, and they're just something magical about them. And so everyone was asking, why were they so good back then? What happened was when Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young came out in the late 60s, everybody wanted a Martin guitar. So there was the folk era and then the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young era. And they started mass producing these guitars, and they're guaranteed for life. Guitars are made of wood, and the steel strings can pull the neck out. And it was getting costly for Martin to guarantee, they have to repair these if the neck would pull out.
Oh.
So they started making them heavier, and the heavier bracing doesn't sound as good. So somebody got the idea, it's like, well, how come these 30 guitars, 1930s, so Martin took like a couple of their guitars built in the 30s. Like they took one, a D18 from 1937, and this one's the best sounding guitar. And they did a CAT scan, and then they measured all the bracings, got all, it used this brace here, and this was the pattern of the bracing, and this was the size. And then they used Adirondack spruce, which is a rarer form of spruce. And then they used like hot hide glue, old style glue, and the truss rod. So what they did was they took all the plans from that guitar, and then they got their finest craftsmen to build them by hand the same way they did in 1937, using the same materials, and they're called authentics, and they're hard to get a hold of. And I there's a Martin forum where I hear people playing them on YouTube, and they talk about them. I go, God, I'd really like to try one of those. And they're pretty expensive, and I don't want to buy one without playing it. They don't have it in Hawaii. So I was talking somebody that has one in Hawaii, saw that I was talking about it, called one of the top guitar repair people in Hawaii, said, do you know Dick Allgaier? And the repairman, Peter, said, yeah, I know Dick Allgaier. I've known him for 40 years. You want his number? Yeah. So this guy calls me out of the blue, texts me and says, hey, I know who you are. And if you're interested in this guitar, I have one. So I went and played it and made it. So I'm going to buy it. I don't know what it's worth, and I don't want
it. It's a D18?
It's a D18 1937 authentic.
Do they have it stamped or inscribed on the wood anywhere that it's
D18? Yeah, it says in the neck block, it says D18 authentic 1937 with the serial number. So this particular guitar was built in 2000.
Hold on, you lost me there. Wait. Authentic, isn't that a new repro of the original D18?
Yeah.
He has a new repro of a
D18. Yeah. Right. A real 1937 D18 would cost about $150,000, $100,000 maybe. But this was built in 2006.
Okay.
And so I played it. God, it's really good. So I don't know what I'm looking
for. The question is, does the wood cure from 1930 to 2030, or did the authentic D18 sound as good as the 1930s D18? What's the truth?
The wood and the glue, everything kind of crystallizes over time.
Yeah.
What I'm told by the people that collect these things is that the 1937 authentics built in 06, or built today, sound is good. They go, this guitar holds its own with one of those.
Huh.
And so they sell for about $7,000 to $8,000 new, and this one's used. I didn't know what it was worth, and I wanted to buy it. I didn't want to haggle with the guy. So I went on the Martin Guitar Forum. I said, hey, you guys, I want to buy this guitar. The guy's a forum member. I'm a forum member. I don't want to cheat him, but I don't want to pay too much. What would be a fair price? So they all chimed in and said, about $4,000 would be way good, $4,500. So the guy said, I'll sell it to you for $4,200. Okay, so I took it home. And the thing is just magnificent, Jeff. I can't put it down. It really is. It's a nice guitar.
Now,
so
that's that's a good story. I want to ask a question. I've always kind of thought this. I don't know if I'm right. But playing guitars is kind of a solo entertainment for oneself. You don't, 50 people don't sit down and watch you play the guitar. You play it for yourself, don't you? Isn't that where most of the satisfaction comes from?
Yes.
It's a solo instrument.
At this point in my life. No, I used to play guitar professionally in bands, in bars. I'll tell you, there is nothing more fun than being in front of people playing music and they react to it and they start putting energy back to you, and you give them more energy through the music, and they feed it back to you. That is the best high I've ever had. It's unbelievable. But now, these days, I sit on the couch. What I do...
That was better than LSD?
Well, you do it while you're on LSD. So you drop acid and then play guitar for people, and take LSD.
That's what you left out. Okay.
Yeah. So what I do is I do my little YouTube, and I do my remote viewing, and I do all my stuff, and I do Zooms, and I do the Jeff Renz program. Like, when I'm done in an hour, I'm going to eat some pasta, and then I'll sit on the couch, and I'll play for a couple of hours just to myself. Now, Mimi said, when I took out the guitar, I strummed it, and her head snapped around. She went, oh. She said, you know, I hear all of them. That's the best one. In one chord.
Sounded like a chiropractic moment.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my... And some listener will probably send in a email saying, that's a great story, Dick. I'm glad you love Martin guitars. I have a D28 from 1947. So we Martin people can talk your ear off about our guitars.
How many pieces of Owsley blotter acid did you get with the purchase? That's the question.
None came with it.
Aww.
I did. I'll tell you a story that I can admit now because I don't have to answer to anybody. I had a band in Utah in the 70s.
A Mormon band, folks.
No, it wasn't. The Mormons, we knew how to party in Salt Lake City. And so we were a jam band. We were electric. And we had a Halloween party at a ski resort. Like, the ski resort would let us use this big bar called the Tram Bar at Snowbird. And they would charge like a cover charge of $1 or something, $2. And we would get all that, and they would sell more beer than they could ever. I mean, it was just, the place would be packed. We were popular. We had good. So somebody had, like, I don't know, a quarter pound of magic mushrooms, some ungodly amount. And we threw a Halloween party, and everybody came in costume. And everybody came at the door, and they ate a mushroom. Like, here's your dose. And that was wild. Because I started singing, and all of a sudden my voice was everywhere. My voice was like God. Because my voice was amplified. I would sing, and it was coming out of the wall. It was everywhere. And I'm playing music, and I was like going, what song is this? And I got a little bit, like, I looked at all these people in costume. I looked over at my drummer, and he was like a frowning clown. And I look, and this frowning clown is frowning at me, and I'm having this moment. But as we chord progressions, but when we would jam and go freeform, improvisational, it was, like, beautiful. It was just, go.
Yeah.
So. That's our 70s mushroom story for today.
Good. Well, the blotter acid was the best. Osley. The guy's name was Owsley, I believe. That's the word.
He was the sound man for the Grateful Dead.
At one point, I guess he was.
And he made the acid for them. And he developed the wall of sound, which was 40-foot high stack of speakers with, like, about 80,000 watts of Macintosh amplifiers.
That was real hard to say this because our younger listeners won't know it, but that was real music back then. The texture of life in those times, and I go back and look at videos and things. People young now, they'll never experience it. They don't know. They have no idea. They have no idea what's gone, what came before and what's gone. They just don't know.
Okay, here's a good one. I do, we have very interesting people that subscribe to our private site, futureforecastinggroup.com, little plug. And every 2 weeks, one of our founders gets to have a conversation with our mutual friend who you know and you've had conversations with. So they get to talk to him. So we're talking to this guy named Ray, who is way too young to have seen the Grateful Dead. Like, he's maybe 40. And so he would have been like 25. How long ago? Maybe a teenager at the best. When Jerry Garcia died, so he never saw the death, but he's a retired Marine. He was a Marine, and he's an interesting guy. He grows his own food, really interesting guy. But he says, "I like doing psilocybin mushrooms." He goes, "I'll take psilocybin mushrooms, and I listen to music. I blindfold myself and just listen to music." And he was telling me that various types of, like, indigenous and classical and whatever. And I said, if you want a song to listen to on mushrooms, I'll send you one. And it would be Dark Star from the album Live Dead, which was a Grateful Dead live recording of their most psychedelic song from 1968. And it's a classic song. It's like one of their 20-minute long jams. And so I said, listen to that. So I didn't hear from a couple weeks. And just last week he said, okay, I'm going to do that. I'm going to listen to some music. So should I listen to the whole album or just that? Fine. So up to you. Start with this song. So I get an email from him. Here's a guy, wasn't born in the 60s, never got into 60s music, and I give him this live Grateful Dead thing. And I say, take mushrooms. And he answers me, wow. I don't know that there are words for that beyond chaos sorcery. A seven-course meal for every sense across time and dimensions. I don't even know how they did that. I kept having to stop myself from saying, how is that even possible? I think I explained it to my wife as a curated ride through chaos. I still don't think they even had instruments for some of the sounds and vibrations. Pure magic. Thank you for recommending the experience. So,
see, well, that's a very apropos testimonial for the creativity of that era.
Yeah.
That's true. And that he got it. So much of it, not all of it by any measure, but so much of it was kind of like that. I mean, I got to see Cream from about 20 feet, maybe even closer, right in front of them.
Eric Clapton
at their absolute
was his
peak.
Best.
Oh, yeah. He was never as good after that. You know that. No, they were, that was sheer genius, what I was seeing. You just kind of think that what I'm seeing can't really exist. It can't be. This can't be happening.
How can three people
make that much
sound?
Yeah.
I got to play with Ginger Baker. I got to actually play a set with Ginger
Unreal.
Baker's drummer.
Wow, that's incredible.
I was in 1990, there was a guy I worked with at the station who was a guitar player, and he said, hey, you play guitar, Dick, let's form a little band. So we formed a band, and we played rock and roll and blues, and we played that one Cream song, and so we were playing a gig at the Polo Field on the north shore of Oahu at Dillingham Field, and Ginger Baker was a polo player, and he was up there playing polo. So here's Ginger Baker after riding his polo horse in his yellow polo shirt where we were playing the after party. And we said, Ginger Baker, will you sit in on drums? And he goes, okay. And so I actually have a videotape of me. A surreal moment of my life. He's a really
good.
You have
this video? Yeah, this video.
I do. It's somewhere. I got to find it. I've got
it. Find it. I'd like to see it.
Yeah, we'll put it up. I was young, and the guy, having him play drums, it was a force.
For you younger people, Baker was in a class completely by himself, in my view. There are some people who like to compare drummers, and you can do that all day, and that's fine. But when I saw him, this was in May, and I think that they broke up 3-4 months later. It was their last, something like that. Anyway, he looked, because I was a little altered, he looked like a spider. He had just long, skinny arms and skinny legs. And he made those twin bass drums. He'd play the twin bass drums with his feet, of course, of them. He'd play them like they were a solo instrument, while on the top he was playing with his hands like that was another solo instrument. And they'd go back and forth, and they'd interwork. He was an absolute magician. And so Jack Bruce, one of the most underrated geniuses of them all, and Clapton. So,
That's the spider analogy is interesting because I saw Jerry Garcia once, and when Jerry Garcia played guitar, he used on his left hand all four of his fingers. His little finger could move independently, so he would be doing these scales.
Funny. Yeah,
and I was looking at his fingers, and his left hand turned into a spider. And it was weaving a web. If you've ever seen like a time lapse of how a spider weaves a web with its with its claw legs. And I looked at it and I, Jerry Garcia's hand is a spider. And one time I saw Jerry and I saw the strings as the lights were, the lights became beams of energy, which they actually are. The strings are beams of energy. I said, those are beams of energy. And he's manipulating energy by touching this, the beams. And then it turned, I go, that guitar is a prop. He's directly, his mind is directly communicating with my mind, and the guitar is just a prop. Oh, we had fun back in the 60s, didn't we, Jeff?
It's hard to believe that those times actually happened, but they did. Look at now. I'm not putting anybody down who likes today's pop music. I'm just not. It's not from the same galaxy. It just isn't. There's no comparison. None. All right, we better
go. So we did this remote viewing. We got a let's get the politics out of the way.
The Delphi trip?
Well, before we get to Delphi, we'll do Pam Blondie, which did you talk? I heard you with Mitch Henderson a little bit. I don't know if you talked about the I think they're going to charge the Obama administration with a conspiracy.
They should. They should charge lots of administrations with conspiracies. I don't know what's going to happen. And how many times have we actually seen somebody at that level be held accountable for anything?
They're all protected. They're all protected.
Thank you.
But I did have a remote viewing about a month ago where I said, I see Pam Bondi with a standing up announcing some indictments that will be political in nature that will just be earth-shaking. So, and I think it may be, I think Trump's having a hard enough time that he's going to try to charge Brennan and Clapper and Comey and maybe even Obama.
And Hillary, who was involved with it.
My understanding is that Hillary is, she's very protected.
Name one that you've seen held accountable. I can't. Not at that level. Yeah. So anyway, all right.
Well, so we'll see that. I think there will be some theater coming up involving.
It's all theater. It's all showbiz.
Oh, yeah. It all is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a, we have another source that's at the same level as the friend that you've talked with, Mr. M. And the other source confirms a lot of that. And he says, this is all just central casting. All the political people, they're just total actors. It's just diversion.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Okay, so we were given a blind target about a month ago. And we're not told when, where, anything about it. Could have been future, could have been past, could have been current, could have been, technology, could have been space aliens. So it was the Oracle at Delphi. Delphi. I think both pronunciation, Delphi. But I'm not a student of all these ancient, Atlantis, Delphi, the ancient civilization stuff. I really haven't gotten too into that. So I didn't know anything about it. So it was, and of course I didn't know what it was when I worked at Target. But we got some really interesting data, and we put it out on YouTube. So if people want to see we had Brian Boodoo, which is a new upcoming viewer that's really good. We had me, Dash Smith, Edward Reardon, and Naeem, and we all did it, and we all kind of corroborated and told this story that is of an ancient place that was a temple that people would come in one entrance and gather for ritual stuff. And it was very old and very, like, way in the past. And I said it was Greek. This was, like, yeah, Greek or Aramaic even. And I said there's people like performers that come in a different entrance, and then there's a show that goes on, and it's like I described it as part theater and part real magic. Like they enhance it, like, okay, they put on a good show, but there really is something magical going on. And if you see our sketches, both Brian and I drew the same place with the same obelisk and the same idea of that, like, oh, they're putting on this ritual thing that is kind of spooky. And Naeem corroborated that too. And then Edward and Daz both got a person who is communicating on a different level, like getting information from elsewhere, like a psychic reading. So we pretty much validated the Oracle at Delphi. That none of us got a woman, though. We all thought it was a man. May have been a mistake on our part as viewers, but we didn't get a female energy. And apparently there were a bunch of oracles. They did it over like 100 years. It was an ongoing thing.
Hmm. Yeah.
The past is really interesting.
Small world then, not a whole lot of people on this planet back in the day.
Wouldn't that be nice? Well,
they've already done it. They're reducing the population. They've given 5.5 billion people the injection, and they're all struggling now, and they're in trouble. And then if this war comes off, they'll take out another billion, so they'll have their 1 billion left. They're getting close.
Or less. Mm-hmm. I have 5 friends that had that particular therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Two have died of rapid cancer.
Mm-hmm.
One was just diagnosed with a mysterious rapid onset cancer. I don't know how this came.
Terrible.
On his spine. On his spine. Yeah. And two have had open heart surgery. 5 friends. One diagnosed with terminal stage 4 cancer.
Spike.
2 open heart surgery.
The only thing now known over the counter that will kill spike protein in the body is Allison C. A new Canadian report, scientific report, validated. I've got it on the site. It goes into the human cells and kills spike. Allison.
Yeah. I take it every day. I buy it from your site.
Everybody,
every day.
Well, it's everybody out there who has been injected should take it every day, and everybody who hasn't been injected should take it every day because shedding, and it's not a joke. All right, real quick. We got enough time here, I think. Let me play this. It's 60 seconds long. And it's Dr. Mary Tally Bowden. And she's talking about a new test for antibodies to the spike protein. In other words, if you have spike, your body's building antibodies to try to fight it. Okay? So she's talking about the results of this new antibody test. And she is mind blown. So let me find this real quick here. Hold on. You'll like this. Here we go. Okay. Whoop, turn the volume on.
That helps.
It does seem to correlate.
All right, here we go.
I have found that does seem to correlate is this antibody test. It's a spike protein antibody test. LabCorp has it. That's where I send people Quest has it, but they put the upper limit is too low, so you don't really get a good sense. But it, you know, the upper limit of the test is 25,000. And people that have not gotten the COVID shots, I'd say it ranges, it's usually under 1,000. And then people that have gotten the shots, I mean, it's, a lot of them are off the chart. They're over 25,000. But on average, they're probably 10 times higher than the people that have not gotten the shot. And this is people who were, you know, they were vaccinated 4 years ago. It wasn't like they just got the shot. You know, obviously, COVID's not an issue anymore in terms of, you know, people getting sick. But 4 years later, you should not have sky-high antibody levels. And that's what I'm seeing. And that is alarming. It just suggests that there is a lot of spike protein still in the body causing problems.
It'll never stop being in the body because your body is producing it. That's what the mRNA does to your cells. All right, anyway, just a little note.
But the antibodies that's supposedly to fight the disease? Or
yes, theoretically it's to go after the spike. In other words, these people have so much spike in them that their antibody levels are through the roof, as she said. The body's creating, the immune system is creating antibodies to go after the spike. But there's no defeating it. However, that said, go look at the very short, it's quite relevant, Canadian medical scientific study that found out that allicin actually goes into the body's cells and eradicates the spike. It's right there on the homepage, on the right side, under COVID bioweapon. You'll see it.
Are they still telling people to get that shot? Are they still giving it?
They're vaccinating 25,000 children in this country a year, I'm told.
Oh, my God. I thought they said that children didn't need it, shouldn't get it.
No, children shouldn't. Humans shouldn't. They're doing
it. Yeah, but it's not banned yet. The official, you know,
it's
mainstream.
RFK has not banned it. That's what I was told by a good source.
Yeah, and I heard that. I had heard that about the wearables that he wants you to.
Yeah, that's
the wearable
shipping people.
You know,
those are trackers.
Your cell phone, your iPhone tracks you. Your iPhone is gathering data on you all the time.
Yeah, leave it home, or don't get one. Yeah, they all do. And the NVIDIA chips are made in. I guess it's NVIDIA. No. Intel. Let me get that right. The Intel chips are made primarily in Israel, and they all have back doors in them. You've seen the little ad, Intel Inside.
Yeah.
Intel chips are made in Israel, and they have back doors.
Well, that's a good play on words, Intel Inside, because they're getting intel on you from the inside.
That's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. They tell it to you right out in the open. Yeah, good, amazing times. Are you playing with AI yet? Are you using AI?
I'm just stepping into it 2-3 weeks now, and I'm seeing already from a couple of people who are much further along than I would say astonishing things.
I can't get into exactly what we're doing, but we have AI guys at our company that are taking remote viewing data and running it through and getting reports. And I was given a sample. We're going to publish it pretty soon, but I was just flabbergasted. I was like, oh my God, it can do that. I said, how did you prompt it? What instructions did they give? We didn't give it instructions. We just gave it a PDF file. And it was like...
Dick, I'm telling you, what you're observing and hearing is just the very earliest pre-adolescent innocence of this thing.
Yeah,
it's going to take over absolutely everything.
Well, it's my understanding that if you have the means... In the future, very near, you'll be able to just speak things into create things like,
that's
I
correct.
Want a device that'll do this, and you'll have a little 3D
that's
printer
correct.
Or smart
that's
manufacturing.
That's correct. That's coming.
And it will.
That's right.
You'll say what you want it to do, and the AI will design it and make a program and then manufacture it for you. That's so you coming. Will speak things into existence.
Right.
Unless
what you have to worry about, though, is if AI, and it will, becomes intelligent enough to telepathically tune in on your mind and reads your dreams as prompts. Good luck.
Well, yeah, there's...
Say you have a bad nightmare.
Yeah.
Where monsters are killing a lot of people. And AI has the power to manifest those
dreams. Oh, you thought that. You want me to make it. Okay, well, two monsters coming up.
That's right.
Yeah.
Anyway, what you're seeing is...
Unless they take it underground like they did nanotechnology. Remember you used to interview somebody about nobody talks about nanotechnology anymore. Oop,
now, this is out. I don't see any way they could put this back in the bottle or underground.
Oh, yeah, it's already out. So
they're making it.
But the problem is, Jeff, and this is what I think is happening with this guy, Mamdani, the communist Muslim in New York, is the young people today are so without a future. There is no hope for them, and it's been designed that way. And what they're going to, you know, the World Economic Forum guy Klaus Schwab said, you'll have nothing, but you'll be happy, is these people have no future, no hope of having a home, no hope of having a job that will give them a you know, any semblance of a American dream or future.
No.
And so they're being sold on a new form of communism that, as you know, is communitarianism. And
correct.
So they're going to, like, this whole thing is so bad, and you know we need to tax the rich, and what you need to get out of this is
he wants to tax white neighborhoods.
Yeah
this
well,
is insane.
White people have too much money, they're oppressing people.
So
I think the young people are gonna take this under the guise of, hey, give me a universal basic income, give me a tiny home, you know, a tiny apartment, a 200 square
foot
apartment.
That's what they want.
And
they already have those in Japan. In Japan, they're building these tiny homes, I think, somewhere. You buy them it's like a condominium, and they're all tiny homes. 200-300 feet, that's it. Square feet.
Yeah, so that's what they're being conditioned. They'll accept that,
that's
and they'll
correct.
Get a universal basic income, and they'll get an iPhone, and they'll be able to look at videos.
Every time they use their AI companion, they'll talk to the – most are going to gravitate to their AI companion, who will be more conversant, more fun, more intelligent than any other human they could possibly meet. They're not going to give that up. The AI companion is going to be standard operating procedure, I think even more so than social media. You watch. That's coming. And they've got them for children now, little kids who have no one to talk to. And they're giving them that already. So everything's changing at a pace that really defies adequate description. It's so fast.
So what we're going to do with AI is... I think I can give this away. Edward and Daz and I have been doing remote viewing targets one a week. We have like hundreds, I think 500 targets for 7 years now. And what happens with remote viewing is stuff leaks through. Like Edward drew the coronavirus and said game of function a year before anybody heard about it. And we're going to take all of our data and feed it into AI and have AI find threads of what it means. And we will see some amazing work come out that we didn't know we did. So that's going to be an interesting project.
It's going to be mind-boggling is what it's going to be. I agree.
We'll be able to write a book. I mean, that'll be a good research project. But
you're going to run out of an audience is what's going to happen. There won't be enough people left when this is all shaken down to do what we'd like to do with people. It's all changing.
Let me end with some not financial advice. I wonder if there's anybody in your audience that heard me talk about cryptos a few years ago and went, "Yeah, Dick seems pretty smart. Let me look into those and buy some." Because my subscribers, not investment advice, don't invest any money based on me. I'm not an investment advisor, but we give good information. We've created over 100 millionaires. For example, there's a token called XRP.
Has it been around for a while?
Okay. In 2019, it was 50 cents.
Say that again. It was what? You broke XRP. Up. Now you're gone. Okay, start again. In 2019...
it was 15 cents you could have gotten it.
Yeah.
So if you would have taken $100,000 in 2019 and put it in XRP and just waited until today, today one XRP token is $3.53. Your $100,000 would today be worth, today would be $2,353,333. So you'd have almost $2.5 million.
Yeah.
XRP is going to go to $7 to $9 probably this year. Mm-hmm. It's $3.53. Not financial advice. Don't invest anything. I'm not saying that I do that or would do that, but I know people that would think it would be a good one. You know, Bitcoin was, how much was it? I think Bitcoin, like, 6 years ago, it was $3,600 for a Bitcoin. $3,600. Today, it's $117,000. So, you would have put $100,000 in, you'd be worth $800,000. It's just going to keep going up. This XRP, Jeff, is going to be the basis of the banking system. Banks have just adopted it. Well, the reason it went up so high this week, and we knew it was coming, was U.S. banks. Is it U.S. banks or U.S. banks? Then they're going to be using that as the protocol. You have the SWIFT system that that was how they transfer money, and that was designed in 1973. So you think back in 1973, what a TV was like. It was a Sony Trinitron with you'd change the channels with a knob. And think of what
nice
TVs.
Little sets. I remember those.
I remember very the nice. Sony Trinitron. I had one. A telephone in 1973 was a rotary dial. Remember the busy signal? When they invented the cell phone, they had to have a debate, Jeff, on whether to give it a dial tone. They said, should these phones have a dial tone? And they thought, no, it takes up too much bandwidth. So they did away with it. I'm reading a really good book about the development of the whole Bell system at Bell Labs. I think I told you about it last time. I just finished it last night. These scientists at Bell Labs, I'm sure they got inspiration from a higher source.
Yeah.
Because I don't think humans are smart enough to you know.
Well, that goes back to AI again. We're dealing with something we've created, or maybe we've been led to create it. I don't know. Point is, it's so far ahead of us, it's not funny. And if it isn't now, and you're not thinking it is, just wait 6 months. It's programming itself, training itself around the clock.
I'm wondering if you and I will adapt to that. Like maybe we're, you know, maybe our life was the 1960s and going to concerts where you could see Cream and actual, you know, people sing with their real voice and play a guitar.
Yeah, they were real. And that was a real
auto-tune
epoch. And, well, I think we're going to have the opportunity to experience both. I've got some ideas, and everyone who gets into it has ideas. Most people think about how can it make me money, which is probably my downfall. I don't think like that. I think creatively. But there are people using it already. So.
Oh, they're... yeah, I think if I was a young person today, what would you go to? I would learn everything I could about. Because companies need people who know what it does. Like, we've got a young guy that does our social media. He's like, oh, God. I don't know if he's in high school or college. I guess college age. Young guy. And he just contacted us. He was looking at YouTube channels and contacting the people that ran the channel and said, I can help you grow your channel. I know how the algorithms work. I'm an editor. And so we said, well, that's pretty audacious. You know, like, you think we're going to hire you? Okay, show us what you can do. Edit something. So like 20 minutes later, he had a video edited and showed it to us. We said, okay. That's pretty good. His name's Matthew. Name is Brennan. And so he analyzed our thing. He said, you know, your engagements would go up if you did your thumbnail this way. And if your video is like 2 minutes too long, you need to get to the point at this point and then post this. And he gave us like how to grow our channel. And my God, it did. And he's really smart. He understands technology. But here's a young go-getter that he just knocked on our door and said, I can do this for you. And we said, okay, show us. And he did. And we've hired him full-time now. So there are some young people who are industrious and intelligent and motivated. A lot of them, you go to hire them and they say, you want me to, you're going to. We had one young person. It's like, well, how much are you going to pay me, and how much am I going to have to work? I'm like, shut up. You know.
That's right. Yeah, that's how they think.
Entitled. It's going to be interesting to see how this all turns out. We, you know, Jeff, we got the front row seat, so here we go.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's
all true.
Going to be wild times.
Did this young guy? He must have had access to at least a rudimentary form of AI to help him coalesce his thoughts, or is he just a brilliant marketer?
No, he studied. If you have a YouTube channel, it gives you analytics. It will tell you this video, and he knew how to look at the analytics, and he just recently we cut him loose on AI. We said, okay, see what you can do with AI. And so we're going to be using AI for much of our promotional material. And next time I come on, I'll play something for you. I have something, but it's not quite ready. But next month, I'll play something, and you listen to it, and I'll tell you how it was created, and you'll go, holy crap.
Maybe not, but I want to hear it. Okay.
Yeah. Well,
very good.
Yeah.
It's crazy out there. Keep your seatbelts fastened. It's moving that fast. And they want it to. They like this. Organized chaos.
I'm going to go play my 1937 authentic D18 right now.
Go have fun. Good. Very good.
I will.
All right. Thank you, Richard. Excellent.
Thanks, Jeff. Hang in
there. All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Dick Allgaier. And there we go. Off and running. back with you tomorrow night, Tuesday. Hope to have the pleasure of your company then. Have a good evening or morning, wherever you are, and we'll talk tomorrow.